Blog Talk Radio.
I thought I had turned off the opener, but it appears 10 episodes in, I still cannot get things quite set. I want to thank you to everyone who's been listening so far. I am back with Mike again this week. I'm going to bring him in right now. We're going to have a full episode since this is the last pre-draft episode. How are you doing today, Mike?
Pretty good. I'm really excited to talk about, you know, kind of the highs the guys were high on leading into the draft and how that fits in with the actual results. So I'm excited.
Yeah, I think like we're finally seeing how things are shaking out a bit. That's only taken virtually the entire process to get there. But, you know, it's definitely interesting. You know, there's a few names we're kind of seeing go up and a few names we're seeing go down late. And it's going to be, I mean, today I woke up to like 3 DMs about people telling me this guy's going to go in the first round now, or this guy's out of the first round. Or it was needless to say, after these next 4 days are going to be, from my perspective, very chock full. I'm pretty much getting, there's so much misinformation that, you know, because, you know, it's one of those things right now where it very much seems that, you know, if you're an agent, you want positive buzz. So you're trying to pass things off to people who might post positive things so you can get more buzz, so you can maybe get more money. Whereas you're trying to stop any negative buzz. And it really feels right now like it takes 3 people to have negative buzz before everyone else jumps on it. And everyone's looking for reasons right now. It's definitely the time of year where everyone's looking to be negative and not positive.
Interesting. I guess we'll get some house cleaning out of the way first. So there's been some weird injury and report issues with Kyle Funkhauser. If you could kind of just talk about that a little bit and how that might affect his draft stock. And maybe is he a supplemental guy now? Has he slid that far, or is he still a late half of the first round guy?
You know, it's really interesting because I haven't heard directly that he's hurt. But I saw today as I was going through and getting stuff, someone was telling me that, he, you know, the end of the last month of the year, he really got hit hard by, specifically by Clemson and Florida State twice. Now, those are both really good teams. You know, the ACC is kind of an up-and-down division, and he kind of feasted on weak caliber guys this year. And then when it was that last month, he had that one outing where everyone was like, you know, and before that outing, I go, well, I'm hearing buzz he could go number one because, you know, he's a big guy. He was kind of the safe pitcher. And he had that one outing, and, I mean, I'm sitting there, my Twitter is, people are being retweeted into my Twitter that I've never heard of going, not only is his fastball flush plus, but his command is plus. And I'm like, his command is never plus. But, you know, there was so much of it. And being retweeted by people I trusted that I'm like, well, maybe I have to reevaluate this guy. But to look at the statistics, he's very similar to the year before. He's still a guy with command issues. And then all of a sudden I'm getting reports, you know, he's advised by Scott Boras, which means he's a Scott Boras client. So depending on an organization, that's a negative to some organizations. Others have good situations, but others, that's a negative. And then I saw, he said, I haven't heard directly that he's hurt, but that his medicals are being denied to teams, that he will not pass them out. This is opposed to, you know, Brady Aiken, who has allowed his medicals out. He's allowing out a very small group of his medicals. It's like you have to sign a waiver to even see it, and it's not like your whole organization can see it with Aiken. It's like only 4 or 5 guys per organization. They're treating it like nuclear test secrets. Funkhauser isn't even allowing that. So when you're a guy who's already kind of in free fall, I mean, there was tweets last week that there are teams in the 20s rushing to see him all of a sudden, or, you know, trying to scout him up because all of a sudden conceivably he could be there, and they had no idea he could be there. And then you add in the report that he's got medicals that they're not allowing anyone to see, and that's when you get really nervous. I have him in the 40s. I have him after Matulia right now because Matulia had a litany with issues with me, has greater upside, and I get hyper concerned when it's like, nope, you can't see this at all. Because like I said, I haven't even really heard injury, so it's just teams doing the basic background check, I assume, and be like, well, let's try to get the medicals on everyone we're looking at, and then that camp coming out and saying, no, you can't have any of the medicals, and that's, you know, when a guy's last month was not strong, when they're after, you know, what looked like a good start to the year, he fades. I mean, a lot of guys faded. He's not alone in that at all. But the medical thing just scares me. And I think that could cause a plummet draft day. I mean, he's still going to go somewhere in that first round, but it's going to be interesting to see if we're not hearing as much about teams. You know, it seems like the first round is kind of set, and after all the talk of teams, you know, going way under slot early to save money later to get guys, we're not really seeing as much talk of that. You know, it seems like the top talents are going to go in the top 10 picks for the most part. So it'll be interesting to see who has money. You know, does it, someone like, I mean, there's a real chance that someone like Colorado could take Taylor Jay, is who I had in my last mock. But let's say Brandon Rodgers is there. I mean, right now I would probably project Rodgers to get to Colorado. If you're Colorado, you could take Rodgers, get a guy who's probably the closest thing we've seen to a Tulowitzki type in a few years, and then come back at 28 and still get Rodgers, because no one in the top five picks signs for full slot. I mean, that's the dirty secret. Might be slot, but no one's ever going to get all that money there. And if you're Colorado with those picks, maybe all of a sudden Funkhauser, because he does have a diving fastball that works in that park, and he was a guy that they were conceivably looking at three. So, I mean, I don't think it's going to totally knock the bottom out of him, but I would not be shocked to see him going in the late 20s.
I think the medical situation in the MLB draft is so different than any other draft setup. I think it's really interesting because there are really odd incentives and there's no smart way to handle this. You know, I think Aiken's a really interesting situation in that he's turning it over to 5 or 10 teams and GM-level people have to request, but ultimately there's no incentive for those people to have any positive sort of reading on Aiken's medicals. So that probably deflates it as much as him not turning over his medical. So I think there's a situation where if you're ever concerned about your medicals, if there's some arm issues, you can't hide it, and it's going to cost you a lot. And it's pretty clear that that's happening right now with Funkhauser, maybe to a lesser extent than Aiken and Matula, but it's happening. So let's kind of start to carve out. You mentioned that, you know, this huge underslot deal that some of us expected, maybe a guy like Whitley going in the top 10 in order to lock down being a lot cheaper, you know, save some draft space financially for the second, third, really 2 through 10 rounds. And that doesn't seem to be happening. So now we kind of have a feel that the top 10 are locked in. What is that, you know, you've done your big boards. The top five players in this draft, who are they? And should I ask you the top five players or who's the top tier? Like, who are you going to lock in as your top three players now? Top five, whatever that tier size is.
My top, I would probably say the first tier is three guys. I really like Taylor Jay. I like him a lot. If he had been given a chance to start, he'd be the number, you know, my big board's going to go soon. And I'm a little upset that it's not – I mean, let's put it this way. I've had my top 75 ranked since last week. With each of those 75 guys, I'm writing on average about 100 to 200 words. And in many cases, I'm trying to find a new way to phrase or put things to people who have read my articles, you know, where I've talked about Brendan Rodgers in four mocks, three big boards, and a capsule. You know, you start to run out of words, but you don't want to just repeat yourself or mimic others. So as I was going through this, you know, my board has been sitting there, and even as I write it, you reorganize. He's like, no, I do like this guy more than that guy, and that's essentially it's just who you like. But my board in the upper part of it has been done since last Wednesday. There's been changes even in the teams as I was working on today, because you kind of sit there and face it. And I've been a little sad to see that people have Tyler Jay ahead of Dylan Tate now, that I wasn't the first to do that, even though I had him up there before. It was, you know, there's not, you know, look at Aaron Nola, who's a right-hander with 2+ pitches. A lot of people say would go number one this year. You know, Aaron Nola is, I was unfairly down on him because he wasn't exciting. When you got a steady guy and there's not a lot of guys out there with 2+ pitches, he should have been, probably should have gone higher than he did last year. Tyler Jay is a left-hander, Nola's a right-hander, and he has a chance for 3+ pitches. And I just got done reading, I invested in John Sickles' book he had where he was kind of looking back at the top prospects and what went wrong. And it was, you know, that made me go and look even deeper. And, I mean, Sickles, you can look at that book. I'd recommend it if you kind of like stuff like that. Almost every single pitching prospect, I would say 99.9% failed because of injury or command issues. And that's why I kind of started moving Tate down. It's why Jay is my top guy, but he started one game. So it's still, I mean, it's almost foolhardy that he's three on or four on my board, and that's why I can't put him in the top tier. There's a chance he won't work. Sometimes that just doesn't happen in spite of everything there. Some guys just can't stretch out and maintain it. I could end up, you know, because I don't have any relievers in my top 75. I don't believe in taking a reliever before about the fourth round. I have several guys who could easily end up in the pen, like Phil Bickford or Ash Russell, who are in my top 40. But there's still a decent chance they're going to start, even if I think they're going to end up in the pen. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. It's not like the closer from TCU, who it is a foregone conclusion, and that's why he's not there, or Burr from Arizona State. They're not going to make my top 100 because they're relievers. And just doesn't present as much value. So, I mean, at the end of the day, the number four guy on my board is still an incredible risk because we don't know. More than likely, I think he's going to work, but there's always a chance he just won't. He won't be able to sustain it. The velocity will fade. The reason I have a little more faith is I've seen him go three or four innings and sustain. So we'll see. But, I mean, it's definitely the three shortstops and then a drop. And then I would probably have the three pitchers and Ian Happ in my next tier. And I may have it right in front of me. I'm trying to think if I would put anyone else kind of in that next grouping. Three pitchers, Happ. Yeah, that would be my next tier. And then the next one is like Benintendi, Allard, Buehler, Plummer, Tucker. The next tier is like 10 guys long. So it's kind of like a top seven to me. And then the next tier is about 10 guys. And it's all in the eye of the beholder. Like I have basically all five college outfielders in that, or college prep outfielders in that group. And it's I would not have an issue. I mean, I might like Plummer the best, but I would not have an issue if someone took Tucker because I understand why, or if Clark is their guy, or Cameron. So it's all kind of equal at that point, I would say, till about, I mean, that's, let's see, if I had to, about 16 guys roughly in that next tier that I have about equal values before it changes up again.
I think Jay and Tate are really interesting to me because obviously we've seen Tate slide a little bit recently. Some of it has been though he spiked in, I believe, a regional outing. His velo was down a little bit in his last couple of starts. He'd been mainly used as a reliever before this season, so he wasn't really stretched out. But his velo went down, so there's a little bit of a question with sustained velocity as a starter for Tate right now, even though it flashed really nice in the first three quarters of the season. Whereas you have Jay. And Jay is intriguing to me. I think, you know, you mentioned he has the potential for three-plus pitches from the left side. And I think an awesome fit for him would be if he could be, you know, slide to the White Sox, which doesn't look like it's going to happen. But to me, it seems like Jay has oddly had the single best outcome in terms of not being moved to the rotation. And we'll obviously see how it pans out on draft day, whether or not he slides. But it seems like Jay's locked into six or better territory in terms of where he's picked. And while I'm a huge fan, and I think there are, you know, obviously immense potential in terms of the offerings, and we've seen him flash, you know, maintain 95, middle 90s plus through five inning outings, it seems like he's actually benefited from not experiencing what Tate has. In terms of being moved to the rotation and being stretched out and maybe, you know, having some struggles in terms of retaining velocity late in starts. And so my question is, has Tate substantively leaped Jay in this regard, or is a lot of it in terms of the context of usage that they've experienced this season?
You know, it's the last month of the year isn't, I mean, some guys are rising, that's without a doubt. You know, I'm hearing a lot. I mean, like I said, I woke up this morning and I had texts about two teams that shortstops. Like, everyone's targeting shortstops. Like, all of a sudden, I think Kevin Newman and Blake Trahan are locks for the top 30 picks. I think Richie Martin's going to go high as well. I think, you know, shortstops always rise. They're the quarterbacks of the draft. And I thought there was a chance they might slip a bit this year because there's such a deep amount of them. But unless people are – I don't feel like I'm a big enough name to smoke screen, you know. no one's going to go out of their way to be like, oh, that guy with the 700 Twitter followers, that's the one we want to smokescreen with. So traditionally, I tend to take, when I'm told things, very much at face value. And I think it's true. I think, I mean, shortstops are rising now, but traditionally what you see in the last month is more teams are looking for ways to separate and knock guys. You know, Brendan Rodgers is all of a sudden falling off of the tops of some boards. Some people are saying, well, maybe he's the third best shortstop. And he is old for his graduation class, you know. There's going to be a point in this year where Brendan Rodgers is 19 and Richie Martin, who's a college junior, is going to be 20. There's going to be a few months where those two overlap with age. And he didn't put up huge numbers. He didn't do a Garrett Whitley, who has risen through this whole process, even though he frankly struggled against lesser competition. But you see Rodgers getting knocked. And I part of me wonders if it's because his team didn't make the playoffs and he just didn't get a chance to see him. You know, Tate's velocity has not been maintained as much, but his last outing was actually okay, or maybe it was two outings ago where he was late. You know, teams are seem to look for reasons right now. You know, like I said, with rare exceptions, you know, John Harris didn't do well in the tournament for his division, which is a weaker one. So all of a sudden, he's getting dinged a bit. This is the time of year when, instead of looking for reasons to elevate, teams seem to look for reasons to just to knock guys down boards. And, you know, you look at last year, at the beginning of May, Bradley Zimmer really struggled. I kept him at 6 on my board because I do a whole season quantitative approach. I look at numbers a lot more than other people. I like scouts, and scouts see guys more than once. But sometimes, you know, I think you need both. I think you need numbers and scouting. And if we redid that draft last year, there's no way Bradley Zimmer gets it to the Indians. The Indians had 3 guy picks in the top 40. I don't know if Sheffield stays as high. Pappy does not. But I'll tell you right now that Bradley Zimmer is gone, and Bobby Bradley might also go in the top 20 picks if you have to redo that draft after what he did last year. And it's definitely interesting to see. I have a few first basemen pretty high on my list, which is a rare occurrence. And, you know, just having that experience last year and seeing Zimmer get dinged for really no good reason, because there was a bad 2 weeks in May, kind of, it makes you realize what teams are looking for. And, you know, Nick Plummer was amazing this summer. He was a top 10 prospect on most boards. He's 5'11". He's going to play in left field, which is just a step better than first. But 60 hit tool, 60 power, maybe a 60 grade eye at the plate. Like, I mean, he just put on a show. He looked like one of the top players in this draft. He doesn't look good in October at the showcase in Jupiter, which is just a showcase. He goes to Michigan where he's not facing top competition and is barely scouted. And he's sliding. I mean, there's talk he may fall out of the first round now. I still have him in my top 15, but you're hearing all sorts of reports. You know, he's undersized. He can only play left field. We haven't seen anything in a while. When you look at, for instance, a Taylor Stevenson, who's kind of burst on the scene and has been a pop-up kid, it's funny that it's like the last month and a half he's popping up, and you're like, well, maybe he can stick a catcher. He's got an arm, but he is kind of big. He needs some catching up to do defensively. He's got some right-handed power, but there's some swing and miss. You know, the hit tool is probably more average, but he got hot and popped up during the right time. He got hot and popped up a month before the draft, as opposed to a Plummer who, and you know, and don't get me wrong, Georgia's excellent. It's one of the deepest, it's probably outside of California, the second best state in terms of prep talent, but it's still just high school kids he's beating up on. Nick Plummer exploded last year at a showcase circuit with the best players in the country. And the unfortunate thing for him was he got hot too long ago. So that's what we're seeing, too. It's very much a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately situation with a lot of these kids.
All right. I guess I do want to talk to you about one guy specifically, because we've never talked about him. And he's flashed and he's popped and he's on the top 15 on some boards. He's on the top 10 on some boards. And it's Cornelius Randolph. And he has just absolutely flown up draft boards, flown up mocks. I think we kind of have to talk about the quality of prospect he is and whether you think he's worth a top 10 pick instead of, say, an Ian Happ or a Tyler Stevenson or a Daz Cameron.
Randolph is 20th on my board. I just double-checked it. And that could change. I have him at 20 and Betts at 21, and it's kind of a back-and-forth thing. Betts has the better bat to me. Randolph is probably going to play a harder position. Betts also probably has one of the worst tools in the entire draft in terms of speed, but you don't really need that at a first baseman. Betts isn't a catcher to me. I mean, you try him there, but he's a catcher as much as Schwarba or Montero was a catcher. I don't think it's going to work long-term for him. Randolph isn't going to stick it short. His foot speed is well below average. He's got a good arm. I really wonder, I haven't heard anyone who thinks the hit tool is plus. I haven't heard anyone who thinks the power tool is plus. You know, it's more like 55 grades of both, which is good. That, you know, that makes him a starter for sure. You know, he's got a good eye at the plate as well. He's not going to get cheated. But typically when a guy rises this late, this quickly, I mean, he's, you know, it's the Georgia State playoffs. It's because all of a sudden people think, oh, he's got 60 power, you know, in the future. He's got 65 power, or we're really seeing him, and all of a sudden I think his speed might be a 70 grade. It's when you think a tool is going to jump. From what I gather, no one really has seen anything that makes them think that Randolph is a different prospect than we really thought a month ago. He's a third baseman more than likely, but part of me wonders if teams really think he can maybe work in second, because that would really magnify his value. If Cornelius Randolph can play second base, you're looking at a real special player with the grades that he has. Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I have him 20th, and it's, you know, I have all, four of the five prep outfielders ahead of him. I have Stevenson ahead of him. He's about the sixth or seventh best prep bat. I'd have to sit down and really look at my listing and see where I have him rated. But, yeah, I mean, there's – I think if I'm mocking – my last mock had him going to Atlanta, because Atlanta's been – it's like the old Sherholtz days. Atlanta's been highly linked to a lot of Georgia kids, which makes sense because, as I stated, I mean, California and Georgia are far and away the top two areas for prep talent this year. And if you're the Braves, it's in your backyard. You've been able to see all these kids more than anyone else. But, yeah, I'm kind of curious why he's popping. I understand. Like I said, he's a good player. He's a very good player. He's a guy who I have 20th on my board, which means, you know, if he went anywhere outside of the top five, I'd be like, oh, that's interesting, but I wouldn't say that's a bad pick. But I don't necessarily understand the meteoric rise of late. I just, you know, he's a above average guy in most areas with a below average foot speed. And, you know, it's an eye of the beholder thing. It's been interesting because one of the things, teams I heard him most linked to was Tampa. And, you know, Tampa straight out said they're looking at shortstops at 13. In a public phone conference, which makes you wonder if that's true or not. And then, you know, I just kind of threw up on Twitter today. I've been getting a lot of people contacting me. I'm getting a lot of info saying shortstops are rising through the roof and expect to see a lot of them go high. And then I had another person I respect come out and say that Tampa isn't smoke screening. That's true. They're going to go extremely high today. They're going to take a shortstop as well. And I don't know. I'm not sure where Randolph's going to go. I feel like he's a fallback for a lot of teams, so it's going to be interesting. You know, he's a 6'1", I think, future third baseman, but I'm trying to remember. I compared him in my capsule, because I did a capsule on him last week, to Kyle Seager without the defense. That was kind of the offensive profile I saw as his upside, which is, I consider Kyle Seager one of the top five third basemen in baseball right now, so that's definitely not a bad thing.
I guess, you know, the next thing I want to do, I think throughout the last, you know, the eight or nine of these that you and I have done together and the immense amount of covers that you've done, we start to fall in love with guys and ultimately, you know, value them higher than we think others are valuing them, or really just have guys that are interesting and you want to bet on their stock. For me, Andrew Benintendi and Scott Kingery are those two guys. I love Benintendi's tool set. I think if he can stick in center field with the power combo and competent defense and solid speed, I think that's really exciting. And truthfully, I'd pop him at, you know, 5 or 6. And Kingery, I love in terms of just how that bat plays at second. And I love great play discipline, which is why I'm interested in Kingery. So I guess my question to you is, you know, who are one or two guys who aren't going to go in the top three, but that you would bet on having good big league careers, but maybe you're being undervalued across the board?
The guy I don't get, and this is a guy I've gone to bat for on Twitter several times. He's not in anyone's top 100 I've seen so far. I don't think he made Kyler McDaniel's sortable database. He did not make Ching's top or Law's top 100. MLB has him in the 120s, and I'm kind of like scratching my head. Is Steven Duggar from Clemson? No relation to the others that have been in the news. He's a guy who was all tools, like just a big bag of tools. He went out in the Cape and just showed again. He was a big bag of tools. He's got a plus arm. He's got plus speed. He's got plus bat speed. He's a 6'2 kid. There should be some power in there. He doesn't play center field, but he probably could play there. You know, just a big, strong, fast kid. And first month, he's in October, he's in everyone's top 40, we'll say. There was not a top 40 I did not see him listed in. You know, in the Cape, he had a good Cape. You know, it was a 795 OPS, 34 strikeouts to 22 walks, 6 doubles. But, I mean, that's the problem. He didn't really show a ton of the power. People keep hoping that would develop. But, you know, he still showed the speed in the arm. So the first month of the season comes out, and he is bad. He is not good, not even a little. And, you know, just to go back, his freshman year, his walk to strikeout was 23 to 41. His sophomore year is 27 to 51. This year, I mean, it's started to even out a little bit more. It used to be more pronounced. This year, he has 54 walks to 49 strikeouts. So he went from unrepentant hacker to a guy who's all of a sudden walked more this year than he had in his freshman and sophomore years combined. And he's also had less at-bats this year than either of those 2 years. So, I mean, his walk rate is just really blossomed. And you go, well, this is a kid who all of a sudden is walking. You know, his career high for homers this year at 5, it's still not a lot. He's got 12 doubles. I mean, he's more of a doubles pop guy. He's played the corner outfield, but he certainly has the speed for center. I mean, he could be the rare center fielder who has a plus arm out there. I mean, a lot of times it's kind of where one of your weaker arms ends up if they have the speed. I mean, defensively, he could be something special. And all of a sudden, he's a very different hitter. You know, it's to go from his K to walkout was, you know, 1.89 last year, and this year it's 0.91. That is a drastic change for a player. And I just don't understand why he's dropped 80 spots on boards since October, when he's all of a sudden changed completely his profile to me, that some of the tools are coming together. He's never – I don't think his bat speed is ever going to turn into big in-game power, but if he's a plus defender in center, you don't need a whole lot more anymore. There's not a lot of those guys out there. You know, if he's a faster version of Taylor Naquin who doesn't strike out as much, that's a pretty good value. And especially for a guy you can probably get in the third round. I'm going to have him in, I think, just outside of my top 50, but I just don't understand how he can improve, show a lot of nice changes, and fall as greatly as he's fallen this year. Clemson's got another kid I really like, a left-handed pitcher, Matthew Crownover, who was known out of high school. He's been an excellent pitcher for them, just a dominant pitcher for them, a left-hander. He gets absolutely no publicity because he's 5'10". So I'm really enjoying the Clemson team. It's this, for some reason, greatly overlooked squad. Crownover this year, 1.82 ERA, 108 strikeouts to only 37 walks. A little bit home run prone, but again, he's probably about 5'10", but he's a left hander. But it's still interesting that he was a draft eligible sophomore last year and was drafted in the 21st round. I'm sure he'll go higher this year, but he didn't quite make my top 100. Just in terms of my guys, I mean, I have Plummer very high. Hap is forever a top 10 pick for me. Eshelman I have in the top 40, just because I think he's going to be a fascinating case study. He has one of the, like, his command is unbelievable. You know, Christian Stewart from Tennessee, he's kind of like a light version of Plummer, a 6-foot-tall left fielder with surprising power. He doesn't have as good of an eye, and his hit tool isn't as good as Plummer, but it's an interesting blend. Josh Naylor is rising up a lot of boards. I have him high as a because he just did big stuff for Team Canada. Bryce Denton is a big bat speed guy, and I often kind of like those bat speed guys because if someone's going to kind of improve, it's the bat speed guys that just have the ability to catch up to those mistakes. I think I have, like, he's probably about the fifth or sixth guy from who's recruited by Vandy who's made the top 75 this year. But those are some of the names I can think of really quickly that I seem to like significantly higher than others. Maybe Kep Brown as well. But I do know some people, there's a lot not to like in Kep Brown, but if someone were to say who's the Joey Gallo of this class, like a big power swing and miss guy who could develop or could be a complete bust, like last year that was Jacob Gatewood, I'd say it's Kep Brown, who's been hurt almost this entire spring. But I finally sat and watched a lot more tape of when he was healthy, and it's hard to look past a 6'5" right-handed outfielder and just what he can bring in terms of raw power to a game. And the fact is that he's not going to turn 18 until the middle of July, with a nice bonus with him as well.
All right, I'm gonna steer you to about four or five rapid questions, just kind of
okay.
Prediction based questions about where the draft's gonna go. So I'm gonna say who's gonna go number one overall.
I think it's going to be Swanson. he's kind of been, to some degree, like the heart and soul of that Vandy team. They're going to have at least two guys in the top 10. I don't think Buehler gets there anymore, so I don't think they're going to have all three. But, and he's just always had a reason to have that chip on his shoulder. You know, he had an amazing year. You and I have talked about the importance of strikeouts walk, and he's another one of those guys who walks more than he strikes out in college. He brings speed. He brings surprising pop. When I talked to Jim Callis and we were talking about the offensive profile, and I brought it up, and he goes, no, that fits offensively. It's kind of like Francisco Lindor offensively. You know, defensively, Lindor's in a whole other plane, but, Lindor's one of the top 10 prospects in all of baseball. And it's kind of that combination of, above-average speed, surprising power, the ability to get on base. I would say Swanson has more speed, and I think Jim Callis said the same thing. But there's some power there that kind of surprises you. It's emerging this year. I mean, he's a guy who had 27 doubles last year. That's a lot. This year he's down to 21, but his home runs are up to 14. His walk to strikeout is virtually even this year. He's got one more strikeout than walk. And he can handle shortstop. I mean, I have Rogers one because it's right-handed power at shortstop. And outside of Tulowitzki, we haven't really seen that in a while. There's not a lot of guys who can really provide plus right-handed power at shortstop. So it's all about Rogers' ceiling is high enough that he stays number one. But if a team wants to take Swanson, I understand. I don't see any. I think he goes one right now. And I can't blame Arizona. And if you look at the horribly foolhardy D.D. Gregarious deal where they gave up Bauer and Shaw to get the shortstop of the future, and that worked out so well, they traded him away. And Chris Owings is a second division starter at shortstop. But if you get someone like Swanson, you can put him one, you can put him two, you can maybe even have him as your three hitter. And he's going to be a solid shortstop for you for the next decade. And he's relatively safe. I think if he hits his ceiling, he's a three hitter. If he doesn't hit his ceiling, he's a solid, like, one. Worst case, he's an eight hitter who brings some speed to the bottom of your lineup. I don't think he's a guy who's going to miss the majors.
All right. Next up, who is a guy who's ranked in your top 10 who could slide to 25?
Pull this up. Let's see. I always said half, and I never actually read the article, but I saw where McDaniel recently said that's not going to happen. He must have found out of a floor for him somewhere. So if I look at that, the only two guys who really could work are Allard and Buehler. And I guess from those picks, I would say Buehler. Allard's one of those guys who it killed his stock getting hurt, but it's also weirdly helped his stock because people can't judge him. And before injury, he was a top five talent. So he's kind of been frozen as like a anywhere from 6 to 20 guy, and I think he'll still find a spot somewhere between 6 and 20. Last week I talked to Taylor Ward, who covers the Angels for Scout and for the Valley News out there, and he's seen all of these guys. He actually said he liked Allard more than Aiken, who's the best high school pitcher he's seen in his time covering the area. But Buehler, you know, he had a slight injury at the start of the year, so then all of a sudden everything that everyone said about him being a slight pitcher held up, so he fell a little. You know, he was a top five guy in most boards pre-injury, and all of a sudden now he's more of an 8 to 11 guy. And then he kind of wears down in the month of May, and that's another reason to ding him, and he's sliding. And, you know, most places he's behind Kaprielian now and behind Harris in terms of pitchers. He's 6'1", 160, and I think one of the things he just needs to do is add muscle. I mean, 160 is not a lot for a guy who's 6'1". I mean, he can easily still pack 20, 25 pounds of muscle onto that frame, and that could help him in terms of the wearing down. It also can't be easy for a guy who's, you know, been pitching nonstop and had an injury. I mean, wear is kind of natural, but I think, you know, people are going to, you know, get queasy about the injury. They're going to get queasy that his month of May was not his best. They're going to get queasy that he's 6'1", 160. So he's 10th on my board. If he does slide, I think, you know, a team like the Indians or the Giants might pop him. Even Kansas City, who does not, you know, those are three teams that don't care about size. You know, the Indians took Sheffield, who was 5'10 a year ago. KC took Lincecum in the top 10, and Kansas City's got a bullpen and a Mighty Mites, and they took Finnegan in the teens last year. So, I mean, I don't know if he gets to 25, but I think he would be the best bet.
The next question is somewhat of the opposite. Who's a guy who's sitting, you know, 25 and later on your board who you could see taking 11 to 15 in this draft?
Let's see, from 25 on. Oh, he's going higher. Ash Russell is a name that comes to mind. I have him at 27. I'm just not as – a lot of people I really like or I really trust like him. And, you know, he's got a fastball and a slider, which some places say could both be plus pitches. They're already pretty solid pitches now. I've gotten on and off the record reports about him from people. And it's, you know, everything is he's a really good kid, but some people are worried about mechanics. You know, it's – and, you know, part of the reason I have Tate and Fuller behind Jay is they both have a lot of effort. And it's the same issue someone like Dakota Chalmers has, where you look at that effort and you go, maybe that's a bullpen arm. And that's part of the problems with Russell. The nice thing with Russell is, you know, he's got those two pitches that already look like potential plus pitches. So if you draft Ash Russell and he does not work out, there's a, you know, a really good chance he can work out in the pen. But I see him all over. I know boards where he's in the top 10, and I know people have told me they wouldn't take him in the top 30 picks because of the high effort to his delivery, and the command is, you know, hit or miss, and the third pitch really isn't there yet. But, I mean, I talked to another guy I trust, and he goes, that 30 pitch is going to be more than a show-me pitch. You have my word on it. So I have him at 27. You know, he's been Tampa Bay. He's been tied to – I've heard him tied to Cleveland by Baseball America a few times. I don't for those who don't know my background, I started as a Cleveland draft guy, and they haven't taken a prep pitcher with their first pick since 2001. So I find it very interesting that I just wonder if that's the ultimate smokescreen. Having covered them, I can tell you in 2013, everyone was telling me they were going to take Colin Moran because they didn't like upside. I had Clint Frazier to them since about April on, and that ended up being the pick. I don't want to say they're a dishonest organization, but they are not an organization that is going to tip their hand early. So I don't know how much I would trust that. But, you know, Ash Russell could also make sense to the Giants, who have done a really good job of developing pitchers. I think I heard him tied to Pittsburgh. I also have Mike Nikorak really low. And the funny thing is, like, every time I talk to someone about him, they go, yeah, he's 6'5", 225. You know, he added 25 pounds of muscle. But when I went to see him, he got hit around. Or, you know, I read a report by Keith Law. You know, there's a lot of scouts here this weekend, but he got hit. And it's, you know, he's in Pennsylvania, which is an okay baseball state. But when he's 6'5", 225 and hit 98, he should be dominating. And at least one in three reports I get talk about, well, he got hit around today. And I think he is a guy who is definitely, you know, he was the number one right-hander on a lot of boards, and now he might be two or three. You feel bad for a kid because he's getting picked apart after he worked his tail off and added 25 pounds of muscle to his frame. But he's the other guy. You know, it just takes one person to go, he's got the stereotypical body. We can figure out what's going wrong here and get everything together right.
Well, that's about all I have. Do you have any closing thoughts or anything you want to hit on before we get passed along until the draft comes around?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I keep your eyes open for if there's a few guys that I'm not sure how signable they are. Lucan Baker, or just butchered that name, is a TCU recruit who's not in my top 75 even though he's in everyone else's, because, you know, he's a two-way player and he's got a fastball that's mid-90s but not a whole lot else. And he's got, you know, 60-grade right-handed power as a first baseman but not a lot else. You kind of hope he does go to school and, like, you know, can figure out what's the best way to go with him. He's an interesting guy. If he goes to, he's committed to TCU, so I hope he becomes a bat, because TCU's record of pitcher abuse and injuries is, you know, longer than my arm, and I'm a guy who's 6'1". So he's declared he's not, but from what I've been told, he is declaring he's not draft eligible, or that he doesn't want to be drafted. It's just a way to drive up his demands. I'll be very curious to kind of see what goes with him. And then, talking to people in the area, I don't think Tristan Beck is signable, who's committed to Stanford. He had kind of inconsistent stuff, and he's a big kid. And then Mitchell Hansen, who's also committed to Stanford, is going to be an incredibly hard sign. Those are three names you're probably going to hear a lot about on draft night, because judging based on years past, they'll sit there. And last year, when we all knew there were certain guys who were not going to be draft eligible, I mean, they have a good crew, but then they also last year had a horrible crew when you had guys like Harold Reynolds and John Hart. And Harold Reynolds was talking like every guy was going to be in the majors in 6 months. And John Hart's track record as a GM is very strong. His track record in drafts is miserable. So I don't know. You know, Hart's now with Atlanta, so he's not going to be there. And I don't know who's going to be in the room. But the guys who don't cover the draft, who they have, just would harp on guys in the past, like, well, why is this guy sliding? Especially if it's a prep guy, and even if it's not one of the three guys I mentioned, if someone's sliding, it's because their bonus demands are too high. It's not necessarily because of anything else, and teams have judged they like other talent better for that money. So just keep that in mind. There's going to be a big name or five who goes to school. You know, there's going to be some college kids who might go back to school. Sky Bolt is a guy I have not talked about at all. Sky Bolt was a guy whose freshman year at North Carolina, he looked like he was going to be a top 10 pick. You couldn't ask really for a better freshman year. And since then has never come close to those numbers. You have to give credit this year. His walk to strikeout is even and his home runs are up. He's a guy you could conceivably see trying to go back for his senior year and try to get a little bit of more money. There's going to be guys who struggled this year who return and see if, you know, if they don't get, and Sky Bolt's going to get drafted in the top four rounds. He's going to get enough money to be signed away. But just understand, everything in the Major League Baseball draft isn't necessarily about talent. The top player does not have to go number one and often doesn't. When you sit down to watch it, understand that first and foremost, the number one thing about the Major League Baseball draft is cash. It's about how much you will sign for. It's about manipulating your pool so you can get as many talented players as you can. There will be high school, very good high school players who go to college, which is for the best because, you know, as we saw this year, this was a class that got decimated by the draft of 2012, which was, I believe, the last uncapped draft year. No, 2012 did have a cap, I'm sorry. But, you know, a lot of those top players were still in that draft. But, yeah, just sit back, enjoy. You know, I have some guys to root for. I'm sure both of us will be near Twitter, so you can always hit us up for information during the draft or at any point in time. I'm at Jeff MLB Draft. Michael is at Hatman EHC. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to drop that. And, I'm really excited. You know, I think once you really invest in some of the different talents and seeing how they fall, and I think the coolest thing that you mentioned is the strategy in the MLB draft is one of the things that makes it different from any other draft in that whether you're, you know, it's not always about taking BPA. It's about setting yourself up best for the rest of the draft and grabbing the best possible upside and asset allocation you can. And so, you know, if there's anything, you know, the sexiness of having a guy who can make an impact this year doesn't exist as much. It's very rare, mostly just relievers. But, you know, if you like nuance, if you like, you know, something that's about competitive advantages and seeking kind of new opportunities and creative disciplines in drafting, then the MLB draft can be really, really fun to follow, especially with the pick caps. So, you know, I think certainly the first round and the first 10 picks are going to be really exciting to see if anybody can do something truly creative that sets themselves up for a really impressive draft.
Before we go, I would be remiss. There's two guys who I've not talked about at all who are not going to make my last 75, even though they're making most, and I've been hearing a lot of talk about them. So real quickly, I just want to throw out two names because I totally forgot. I want to talk about these guys real quickly. One is Tanner Rainey from West Alabama, who's an upside kid. My only issue with all the upside talk is he's already 23 years old, which is old for the draft. He's had some arm stuff. He's got really high velocity. I think that he is a reliever. There's talk he could go in the first day, that he could go in the top 40 picks. You know, he's essentially a two-pitch guy. He's also a two-way guy who did was a really good hitter, but his pitching is where he's going to go. I mean, I could see someone trying to mess with him and turn him into something, trying to make him a starter. I just can't see it happening with advanced age. And the other guy that's getting a ton of talk that is the similar kind of build to me is Josh Stoumont, who we've known about for a while from ASU Pacific, who's you know, he's not a super big kid, but he's been hitting triple digits. Again, I think he's a future reliever. And to me, you know, we're running low on time, but I think one of the biggest things you can look at, and I think one of the things that everyone misses on the draft is, you know, everyone wants to find a Grady Sizemore, a Matt Kemp, or a Mike Trout, you know, that big athletic center fielder. But that's not an easy thing to find. There's a limited number of people like that in general. But it doesn't stop teams from drafting overly toolsy players and looking at tools over likelihood. Sometimes I think teams miss out by realizing what is easier to find and what is more likely to go. You know, if you find a guy who has a really good eye, that's a distinct skill set that you can just have. You can know the strike zone and know it well and find success. And both Rainey and Stoumont are guys who have fastballs and then, you know, triple-digit fastballs and not much else. And I think they're kind of the classic example of guys who are probably going to go 40 spots too high, whose upside is really just back-end pen arm, but someone's going to think they can make a starter out of them. And maybe they will, and maybe I'll be wrong. But I think that's still like a 1 in 100 chance. And for every one time one of these guys turns into a starter, 99 times, let's put it this way, 50 times they never make it to double A, 30 times they turn into quad A guys, and another 19 times they become all-star relievers. So if your team plays it a little safe, when I did my 20-year review of the best drafting teams in all of baseball, number one is Oakland, the king of the safe teams, and St. Louis is in the top five. You know, the queen of the safe drafting teams, if you want to put it that way, the two safest drafting teams in all of baseball. There's nothing wrong with upside, but don't get upset if your team plays it a little safe on draft day, because historically that's shown that that is your best outcome. If you, to get the best outcome, that is probably the way to go. So with my little rant at an end, again, you can find me at Jeff MLB Draft. You can find Michael at Hatman EHC. We're going to try to do another one maybe the Tuesday after the draft. We're just trying to figure out all the timing. For those who don't know, the draft on Monday is the first round, the compensation round, the tradable draft choices that are skipping me. I currently can't think of what we call those picks. The picks for the poor teams. And then there's second round, and then there's the second round of the picks for the poor small market teams. And then it'll be rounds 3 through 10 on Saturday, and then 11 to 40 on Wednesday. I'm going to have wall-to-wall coverage, at least on every single team. I'm going to do a talking about the first-round pick, my favorite pick, and the diamond in the rough for each of those teams. So that'll be up. And if nothing else, at some point during this process, maybe if we have to, even the week after, we'll get together and just sit down and talk draft. So, as always, thanks for tuning in, and 4 days till draft.